You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Thursday, July 12th, 2018, and this is your host, Stephen Novella. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Tara Santamaria.
Howdy.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
Evan Bernstein.
I love New York.
And we have a special guest this week, George Robb.
Hey!
I'm walking here. And we have some special musical guests who we'll introduce when they're getting ready to sing. So it's a surprise. So not to the people who are sitting in the room because they could see them, but for the people listening at home, it'll be a surprise. Okay, so we're at Nexus 2018. This is Nexus number 10. Can you believe
it?
Wow.
Oh, Nexus. Nexus.
Yeah, X-Nexus. Nexus 10.
And this show is actually going to air as a podcast when we're at DragonCon in September.
While we're at DragonCon, this will be the show that airs.
Right.
Yeah, that's
right. But our patrons are getting a sneak peek at some of the stuff that's going to happen tonight.
Right, not right now.
That's happening right now.
Is it happening right now?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Live?
Are
okay,
we streamed?
Cool.
We're streaming.
They never tell us. He never tells us.
No, because when we're streaming, you act like a jerk.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you guys know. Did we say this in the main show, or did we only say it in our special members only stuff? That he's been secretly recording us for years before we start the show.
Yeah.
And now, like, patrons get access to that.
It's called pre-show banter.
It's called incriminating evidence.
I have like, oh my God, when we die, when we open these archives, what I'll do is I'll give them all to my son, and he'll sell them all when we're all dead.
Yeah, I don't trust him with all.
You're only publishing. You're only publishing this the stuff that is acceptable to be published for public consumption.
According to you.
Yeah.
Up to me, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the real Chase good the stuff is
I mean, no, this is, Steve's saying, to clarify, Steve's saying, this is even edited. I have to edit this because we...
Heavily.
Yeah, we talk about a lot of crazy shit. Politics, religion, family...
Lots of cursing.
Yeah, somebody reached out to me on about Talk Nerdy and said, I used to love Talk Nerdy, but you just curse so much, I don't think I can listen anymore.
What?
And I was like, to be honest, like that's just how I talk, but I do label certain episodes with an explicit label or not. And but you don't curse on SGU. I was like, no, Steve just edits the f*** out of SGU. We all curse all the time on SGU.
Occasionally one slips through. Very rarely.
Yeah.
Very rarely. Yeah. Not enough to get an explicit rating.
You don't even bleep. You mean you don't bleep it either?
I always bleep it. I always bleep it. Okay. Actually, what you do is I don't bleep it. I just
cut
like
out.
You say, you know, and everyone knows what you're saying, but it's okay.
Like
did you ever see when they did that to the Cookie Monster?
Yes.
When he's not swearing,
they just bleep him out.
Oh, yeah, yes. but they pick words that have that.
Oh, they did it. They did it to the Count every time he said Count.
And
they bleep him every time he says the word Count.
That sounded like swearing.
Creepy. The Count. Yeah, the Count sounded like he was a total creeper.
Yeah.
Well, something about him with the candles, like getting you with the candles. Remember that?
I mean, the whole counting thing is very creepy.
Yeah.
Let's face it.
My mom was on my show once, and we were talking about raking leaves, and she was talking about raking leaves and rake, and she loves to rake. She hates to rake after a while, and I took the R-A out, and it just sounded like, it was so good. She talked about just effing for like the whole how sometimes you feel like beaking, and sometimes you don't feel like beaking. And like, you know, after a while, your hands hurt because you've been beaking so hard.
Wow.
And then she called me like a couple days later and said, what did you do to me? Raking. We were talking. She's a good egg, though. She's a good egg.
She's a good sport.
She's a good sport.
Like, George is like, Mom, what are you going to do about it?
That's right. It's on the web, baby. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You raised me. It's your fault.
That's right. Bad parent.
All right. Well, we got this is going to be a fun show. George has a bunch of questions lined for us.
I do.
We're going to start with a couple of quickie news items just to get us into the feel of the SGU. Who wants to go first? Kara, you got it?
Sure, I can go first. So I found an article on The Conversation. You know, we get emails a lot asking where we find a lot of our content. Steve will never tell us where he finds science or fiction content.
For obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons.
I've seriously considered going through his computer and finding his little websites, but I'd stop myself from doing it.
But one of the websites that I highly recommend is The Conversation, because it is... Their subheading is Academic Rigor, Journalistic Flair. So it's a lot of professional academics who are really interested in science communication publishing about different topics. So you get a cool intersection of the two. And this one is an article about yawning that was just published maybe a week or two ago.
I'm looking.
Will you keep an eye out for me while I'm looking? That would be great.
I'll count.
It's written by Christine Calder, who's an assistant professor of behavior at the College of Veterinary Medicine at Mississippi State. And it's really a review. It's not based on anything that's too new. But the article is about why we yawn, why animals yawn, and why yawning is so damn contagious. And so what do you guys think? Why do we yawn?
I thought we never knew.
Yeah, right. But why do you think we yawn?
All right. Well, I read the sleep book.
That's not true.
And yawning apparently, like, it starts with one little fluffy guy, and then the whole world ends up yawning from when that one yawn, and then everyone goes to bed at the same time.
Is this Olivia's Globally. Book?
No, it's Dr. Seuss. The sleep book.
Oh, I don't know that. I've literally never read the sleep book by Dr. Seuss. Have you?
No.
Yeah, he's got young kids.
I've been reading about this for decades, but the prevailing theory, which has not been proven, is that it stretches the tendons in the jaw, which it has an alerting effect. Animals actually yawn more when they're waking up than when they're going to sleep. And it's contagious maybe because, like, the pack is getting ready to do something. So if one person is yawning, then...
Then why yawn before bed? Before winding down? No.
So there's also a lot of evidence to show that... yawning occurs to potentially cool down the brain, which is very strange because they
does it need to be cooled down?
Yeah, so apparently studies have been done. And Bob, speaking to what you were saying, like about getting more oxygen, that goes back to Hippocrates. Like that's a really old hypothesis.
Makes no sense whatsoever.
They believed at first that it increased oxygen, that it increased your blood pressure, maybe your heart rate, maybe it helped all your blood start pumping. But most of that has actually been debunked. And some of the consensus now, based on several studies where the frequency of yawning was measured in the same area during summer and during winter months. And they found that apparently the farther you move away from ambient temperatures, especially into warmer temperatures, we see an increase in yawning episodes. But again, nobody really understands why. We also see that in different animals, yawning behavior is different. Some animals don't actually breathe in when they yawn. They just gape their mouths. Mm. So in that way, they think maybe it's a threat display, things like that. But a recent study, there have been multiple studies, that have also shown that certain neurological regions that are involved in kind of empathic processing, less so mirror neurons, but more so like whole brain regions, seem to be implicated in fMRI studies of yawning. But more recent studies looked at dogs and dog behavior. Dogs with their owners. Do the dogs catch the yawns from their owners? Do the owners catch the yawns from their dogs? And a 2011 UK study showed that only 5% of the dogs that they studied could catch the yawns. And, you know, that's kind of like
random
equals 0.05. Yeah, that's not very good. 2013, they showed that familiar people had a higher rate of catching, or familiar dogs caught yawns more commonly from familiar people than from strangers. But a more recent study showed something kind of interesting, which was that in shelter dogs, when human beings yawned, some dogs would catch the yawn and some dogs would not. And when they actually looked at their cortisol levels, they found that there was a significant difference in cortisol levels between the dogs that caught yawns and the dogs that didn't. And so this may actually speak to what you were saying, Steve, in some kind of some form of comparison, that yawning may actually have to do with stress response. It may be an alerting response, something like that. So it could be the case that if your dog yawns when you yawn, that it's stressing him out or that he's perceiving stress. But apparently the jury is still really out.
But why do you yawn when you read about yawning?
Yeah, they talk about that a lot in the article. But a lot of that, my assumption or my guess would be that that is sort of a Pavlovian thing. We've just been doing it for so long. Yeah. And it's, you know, we do talk about it being contagious. And there are probably evolutionary neurological reasons for that. But that's so heavily behavioral as well that the more you do it, the more you do it, the more you do it, the more you're primed for it.
Well, yeah, again, not everything has to have a purpose. Right. You know, we do stuff because we do stuff. You know, like the brain is so, like if it's necessary for a behavior to react in some way to environmental triggers, in order to get that, there may be a lot of other kinds of triggers that are not adaptive, but just come along for the ride. You know what I mean? Like, because we need to yawn when other people yawn, we also yawn when we read about it or when we think about it, or, you know what I mean? But that's not every aspect of it is adaptive. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Is there any way that this relates to, like, I know it's weird, but like amphibian remnant, like, you know, gill breathing? Because, like, you look at a
fish. Well, when
breathing,
fish yawn. Fish yawn, and so do reptiles, but they don't actually breathe in when they yawn.
Yeah. It has nothing
they just
to do
gape
with
their mouth.
It has nothing to do with oxygenation or breathing or anything.
But could that be something that's left over in us, like some kind of remnant of like a reptilian?
That's a pretty long remnant.
Yeah,
though.
I don't know.
It's probably also
a couple hundred million.
It's probably highly likely that it's not just one thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Think about human eating behavior. If we want to study it scientifically, really biologically, and say, oh, people eat for nutrition, and they eat so that they don't die because they need, you know, the sugar to be converted to ATP, and it's the only way that they're going to function. But people eat for a lot of other reasons, too. And there's a social component, and there's, you know, it's really evolved as we've evolved. And so yawning probably has a lot of those aspects.
Well, the poster child for that is sex, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and
wait, Steve, you yawn during sex?
All the time. So
no, Jocelyn yawns during sex.
I never look. I don't know. But think about it. Like, people have, like, why would somebody have a shoe fetish, right? Or just whatever, something crazy like that. It's like, well, because...
What have you heard?
That's why I'm bringing this up to you. So, you know, you think about it. Like, my thinking was always that, well... Yeah, I mean, we have a huge part of the brain that's dedicated to having sexual triggers, right? And it's just messy. And so we're going to have a whole bunch of crazy cross-wired sexual triggers that don't really make any adaptive sense, but people do weird things
but
for weird
reasons. But
could
you turn anything into a fetish?
Well, that's the other question is it purely learned?
Yeah.
Like, is it, because that's also part of this, because it's not just a purely pre-wired behavior. It's also meant... It also functions in such a way that it's a learned behavior. So, like, you associate two things, you know, like something that is associated with sex then becomes a trigger unto itself. Yeah. Because why not? Because that will prime us for whatever, you know.
Fetishism is also a lot more complicated than that, too, especially if we're talking about it from a diagnostic perspective. Fetishism really means that you cannot physically, like, orgasm, or you cannot get excited unless that thing is present.
Yeah, that's
so.
That's the diagnostic.
So most
definition.
Of this stuff is just stuff you like. It's not a.
That's not a fetish. But there's also some decent evidence that links fetishism, especially foot. It's funny you mentioned foot because sort of your somatosensory homunculus, right? If you were actually to break down the part of the somatosensory cortex of what inputs are coming from different parts of your body, your feet are right next to your junk.
There you go.
And so there really could be, like, you actually use the word, like, cross-wiring. It could just be cross-wiring.
Yeah. In a way, you could think that they're lucky then, because they have something else to turn them on.
No, but sometimes, but they don't need, they literally
oh, they
can't.
Oh, they have to have
they
it.
Have
yeah,
they
have to
have it. The red shoes. And that can be difficult socially to navigate. For some people, they make it work.
Well, let me try to answer this one for me. Why is it harder to find good porn the older you get? Every guy in this room that's above like 30 knows exactly what I'm talking
don't
about.
Don't leave the women out.
All right, I didn't know. Steve's shocked because he doesn't want to answer
taste
the question.
Has changed.
I'm trying to process that.
What's your definition of good, Jay?
It has changed since he was a teenager. Right.
So that's you saying because you're not commenting on the availability of porn. You're commenting on what you consider to be good porn.
Yes.
And what you consider to be good is not what's out there.
Yes.
Steve, it's out there.
Just haven't looked hard enough, Steve.
It's out there.
Jay, I'll send you some links. You'll be okay.
Bob has 5 more years of like searching than I do. So yeah. As a matter of fact, I could just ride your wave. You just keep sending me what you like, and I never have to search for porn again.
You wouldn't like what I like.
That's a little creepy.
It's very creepy.
I'm just joking. It's all joking.
I know.
We're streaming.
And we're also on video.
I wish I knew that 5 minutes ago. All right. Let me do my news item, really. Mine's a quick one. One thing that we've been following in the literature, which is very interesting, and there's a new study now which throws a wrench into the whole thing, is the relationship between motivated reasoning and your ability to discern bullshit from things that are real, right? Like, can you tell when something is fake news, for example, or how gullible are you towards claims, pseudoscientific claims, when they are in line with your partisan ideology versus out of line with your partisan ideology?
How good's your baloney detector?
Yeah, yeah. Does your baloney detector shit the bed when you're faced with a claim that you want to be true? That's motivated reasoning, right? So the conventional wisdom is that, motivated reasoning kicks in when we are dealing with claims that we either identify with, a part of our identity, or that are in line with what we believe already, or with what we want to believe, even if we don't really currently believe it. Does that make sense?
So it's ideological.
Yeah, there's some kind of ideological motivation there, and then we're really good at rationalizing what we believe, what we want to believe, what reinforces our identity, which reinforces our narratives, you know, pushes all of our psychological buttons. But I get the feeling that researchers are still dancing around this, and there's a lot of different conflicting results. And it depends on like how you ask the question, what you consider a partisan topic, right? So here's yet another one thrown into the mix. This is an interesting study, though. The researchers looked at headlines, alleged news headlines, some of which were real and some of which were fake, that were either neutral or would be generally looked on favorably by liberals or favorably by conservatives, right?
Okay.
And they also studied the subjects to see how they scored on a standard test of analytical thinking. And we've done this before, I think, on the show. So, like, these are tests where there's an immediate intuitive answer that's wrong. But if you think about it for a minute, you can analytically get to the correct answer.
Yeah.
Right?
It's the ball in the bat.
The ball
thing.
In the bat.
Yeah,
do you remember the details of the, I'm trying to think of the ball.
No, it's like the answer ends up being 10.5, but you want it to be 10 or something.
Well,
like
okay,
that.
So I think here it is. Like if a bat costs, oh man, now you can't get the deal. Like a dollar and the ball is 5 cents.
The bat costs a dollar more than the ball.
Yeah, the bat costs a dollar. Yeah, right. How much does the bat cost or the ball cost?
And you want it to say a dollar.
You want to say a dollar, but
it's 10 cents.
Yeah.
But that's not right.
That's not right yet. So your gut feeling is wrong, but your analytical answer, but you have to stop and pause and give the analytical answer. So they tested people with that, and they ranked them on how good of an analytical thinker they are. And then they gave them the fake headline, real headline test. So how do you
10 cents.
So what was...
Oh, so yeah, so if you get primed, that you got the wrong answer, you're going to be more...
I think the assumption would be, they probably hypothesize that people who are ideologically aligned with the thing are going to be less likely to use analytical thinking, and more likely to use kind of emotional reasoning or a quick RT.
Right, so let me break it down very simply. So what you're saying is that ideology trumped analytical ability.
That would be the hypothesis.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
But I think if you get that question wrong initially and then get it right...
Well, that's a confounding factor, because that's not what they were interested in.
They're not looking at that.
That would depend on what order in which they did things. They could have done the questions first and then done the headlines first and then the...
Right.
The other things
usually
after.
They'll do a mixed design.
They usually do mixed design.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's say they controlled for that and that wasn't a factor. So is it analytical ability or ideology that was the determining factor for how gullible they were towards... fake news.
It's got to be ideology. It's got to be
ideology.
It was not ideology.
What was it?
It was their how they scored on their analytical.
So they can't think analytically. So therefore,
yeah. So the authors concluded that it was lazy thinking. You know, not being analytical, not partisanship, not ideology that made people gullible.
And when you say the authors argue that, I mean, obviously there's going to be a different effect size. It's got to be both, but one was more intense.
No, there was
intense.
No effect. There was no what? Effect from partisanship. So,
none? So, Steve,
none.
Does that mean...
In their study.
Can you,
right, I know, that's interesting.
Can you conclude from that people that think more analytically... All right, you're saying, in effect, that people that think more analytically are less affected by their own ideology.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So does that mean that they have less ideology, or no, they're just not as affected by it?
Everybody's, yeah, so you read a headline and you really go, oh yeah, man, I totally believe that. Or you go, wait a minute, how does that make sense? That doesn't, that, you know, your skepticism is triggered. So if this is true, which I don't necessarily believe it because it's one study, it's a complicated topic, there's lots of compounding factors.
He's thinking analytically about it.
There's lots of other studies which show different results, but you know, if this were true, that's actually a good thing for us, right?
Yeah, it's
a
good, it's no, it's the best thing. Thing. We can teach people their way into better methods of thinking.
Yeah, even nowadays. If they're ideological.
It'll minimize the impact of their ideology.
It's not
nice.
A block of granite. You know,
that's the best news you can get.
Right? Is better, is more powerful than ideological thinking, is what this shows.
Now we just got to make everybody analytical.
Well, that's
good luck.
Well,
yeah,
that's,
but that's it's attainable.
It is. Whereas if it were,
if it were ideological, you would be hitting your head against a stone wall, basically, to try to get people to change.
It reinforces what we've seen.
It's interesting, but the thing that makes me really skeptical of this study is how easy it is to confound. And if looking at the arc of this research, so early on, the research was showing, oh yeah, it's totally motivated reasoning, totally partisan. And then the research has walked that back a lot. Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, it's only when it's really ideological beliefs and not when it's more neutral beliefs, we don't engage in motivated reasoning. And then it really depends on how you're asking the question, like how ideological it is. And then it turned, the backlash effect, you know, was not only being gullible towards fake news, it was actually digging in your heels. And then the follow-up research said, no, there's not so much. There isn't really so much of a backlash effect. So I don't know. It's really, the research has really been pulling back a lot. So maybe that actually, you know, might indicate that this is correct because it is showing that, no, there actually isn't that much of an ideological effect. I think it's probably a combination of things at the end of the day.
So.
And I think the details of how they ask the questions.
But if I put myself in that position, they can't just give me a piece of paper with a headline on it because I'm like, what's the source? Who wrote it? Where was it published? When was it published? Let me see. I want to, if I'm going to dig in, where did the author get his or her resources from?
And that's interesting. I wonder if how many people come out of that interview and you tell them you were deceived and they might think, no, I wasn't deceived. They may want to fight back against
it. You know where all of this
came
from.
We've seen that happen also before in certain skeptical studies.
Oh, for sure.
Definitely.
This all came from those famous obedience experiments.
Milgram.
The shock test?
Yeah, Milgram shock test. People were enraged that they were led to believe they were harming somebody when they weren't.
Well, we need and more shock tests.
Really
sure.
Well, now you can't do them. Like, that test is actually... Like,
wait, wasn't that the test where they thought they were actually killing people?
Yeah. No.
And the people who were pressing the button to shock people got mad?
Of course. Yeah. It was so emotional.
They were manipulated in the thing that they...
They were manipulated.
They were killing people. The freaking researcher should have been like, get the... out of here.
But no, but the researcher didn't say get the fuck out of here. He said you must continue the experiment.
Remember
it's
that.
The power of the lab coat, man.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Lab coat and a clipboard. You'll do anything.
But that's one creepy. Thing, I know we probably want to move on, but one thing that I think is really interesting about social science experiments in general, now that I'm like super steeped into them again, is that it's so different from what we think of as traditional lab science. Yeah. So when we're looking at humans and we're looking at human behavior and it's way more common, you can't just use cloned mice, right? And effect sizes in psychology, small effect sizes are considered large in psychology. Like if this accounts for 20% of the variance in a population, that's massive. Yeah. That means it's a really big effect, but in lab mice it wouldn't be. And the last thing is that you're studying constructs. Mm-hmm. You're never studying an actual thing. Right. You're always studying a thing that you design to be a measure of the thing, right. An approximation of the actual thing.
Of course.
And so a lot of times the reason that we can look back at old studies and say, that didn't really tap into it is we didn't design it well.
Right.
That's
really
what it comes down
to. That means that, first of all, the scientific method morphs it for different spheres of science, like in psychology.
Psychology is totally different because you have different subjects.
Yeah. But,
Bottom line is you have to study it for decades from every angle before some kind of pattern really coalesces. You know, and these early studies and interpretations, you know, who really knows what it means?
Yeah, we were just talking about the marshmallow test, right? Like we used to think it was all
about
self-control.
The marshmallow
we just did it last week.
Making a Ghostbusters reference. Tell me about the marshmallow.
And this won't have aired by... this is going to be very confusing time travel reference. But, now know if it's really about self-control. There's all other sorts of social things that lead
to
what kids
are harshing our marshmallows.
speaking of the sort of testing thing, I don't know if you've seen Vsauce.
Love Vsauce.
Actually did the, would you pull the lever to kill one person instead of five? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And they set it up. They had all the ethics people.
The trolley experiment.
Yeah, the trolley experiment. Yeah. And they did it. And it's a half-hour YouTube thing. It's mesmerizing.
Oh, it's on YouTube Red, right? Yeah. On his big...
I saw it on regular YouTube.
Oh, you did? Oh, that's good. That.
Yeah. Wait, they pretending that they were killing them for
real? They were basically bringing people into a train station. They were sort of setting up like a volunteer to help. The person that was supervising steps out for a second. And then they're noticing this thing and they're watching it on monitors. And it's all pre-taped.
What were people doing?
Well, it was a mix of some ended up doing the right thing, some did not. They ran out of the room to try to find the person.
The right thing.
Sorry.
Yeah. Isn't that the whole point?
They did a thing.
Anyone did the trolley experiment in real, like for reals?
Well, it was all the videos are all pre-taped, so there's nothing live.
I know, but I mean,
live.
They brought people through the. It wasn't a hypothetical. What would you do?
Yeah, because it probably wasn't literally for psychology. It was probably for entertainment.
So I have a question.
So they didn't have to pass IRB.
It's mesmerizing. Wow.
Did anyone just throw the lever?
No. No one quickly did it. It was agonizing, and you watch this happen in real time. Mm-hmm. And these people are like they're watching the video and they're putting it together, and it's mesmerizing. I don't know what. Wow.
It's the same reason
that
Dr. Phil can get away with what he gets away with on air.
Did anybody say, "Holy crap, this is the trolley experiment"?
You would think, right?
Wow.
I was taking the marshmallow test.
It's like the best thing I've seen on YouTube probably like in the entire last year.
What somebody should do is take those tapes and then like fake the train actually crashing. People are screaming. Yeah, like do special effects. It's just an idea, Steve.
He always goes just that far over line.
That reminds me. That's what people do on the internet.
Who saw that commercial or a YouTube video where this person would come in and sit down for an interview? And so I come in, sit down.
Yes.
Here's a desk. Here's the interviewer. And there's the window. And it's, oh my God, it's not really a window. It's a new 4K Ultra HD TV. So it looks really real. So they're being interviewed and they're talking to the person and all of a sudden an atom bomb goes off.
An asteroid
hits and the wave of destruction is hurtling towards them and of course they freak out because this is not a good thing to happen, right? and they did it over and over and the reactions were interesting and like holy crap. And it's then it was all they revealed that this is just an ad. This is just a test to show you that how real our 4K TVs are. But I was thinking it had to be staged. And they had to be all actors. You can have a heart attack.
That's like firing a gun at someone and then saying, "Hey, how about those blanks I put in the gun?" You're like, "What?"
No, I say shenanigans because
as soon as you shift and you don't see the angle,
parallax, you won't see that.
Yeah, there's no parallax. You know, you would just literally have to move one head width over.
Yeah, it's all about where the camera was placed, not where the person was sitting.
Yeah, I see. Look, it was funny. I say shenanigans. I say total shenanigans.
Well, I mean, if you're in the sweet spot right in front of it, I'm not going to be thinking, let me test if there's any three dimensions going on here.
Of course you move. If an asteroid is slamming the thing, you just say, I'm not going to move my head at all. I think the first thing you would do would be like, holy, you know, and be like, what are we going to do? And none of them move.
Also, no ad company would be willing to go into the amount of liability. Yeah. Like, it's like not worth it for them.
Didn't get by the lawyers, huh?
No.
Nah.
They have lots of lawyers.
Yeah. But it's a funny ad.
Well, I don't know what's funny is I saw it.
It was believable acting.
And I believed
it. The acting was very good.
All right. It's time to introduce our special musical guest, Hai Ting and Company.
Have a skeptical quote that relates to, I mean, it's now so far back, the news item that you were just talking about. I give the palm to the storm. Jay, since that was a quote, why don't you give us the name of the author?
V. Jennifer Michael Hyde, poet and historian.
Hecht?
That V means
that
that's
V is five.
Five Jennifer Michael Hyde.
You did that deliberately.
No, but
it's an easy mistake. Jennifer, it looks like an initial.
Also, that was Ashley on clarinet and Matthew on the guitar.
Now, these are excerpts from your show called Science Fair. Is that right?
They're not exactly excerpts, but they were conceived as little interstitial songs for the show. The music is all by Matthew Shickley, who's here on guitar.
Cool.
And we're performing part of the show on Sunday in one of the speaker slots.
Science Fair, I was very fortunate to be at the first week, I think you guys did it, and it was amazing. It was just pure, like, what, hour and a half or so of just songs. Like, Haiting sort of like existed in this universe where this sort of science, at least the way I saw it, this science professor just talks about science, but sings about science. And I was just saying earlier, it was the first time I finally understood how, like, the lunar cycle works. Honestly, it was
It took an operatic song
with a moon hat.
Yeah.
And that's what, and I to this day still picture the moon hat, because Haiting had a camera. Yeah, it's going to be on Sunday. It's awesome. It's so great. It's so good. It's so good. Anyway.
You mean like full moon versus waxing?
Yeah, like what's going on? Like what are you seeing and why are you seeing it? Totally. Yeah, I knew it empirically, but I know it's, yes, Steve incredulously doesn't believe. I never could quite put it all in my brain.
Yeah. He's just a musician.
I'm just a musician. A drummer, no less. So it's, yeah. But no, the
worst
beauty
kind
of the way it was explained,
yes,
was easy then for me to picture in the future and be able to say, oh, that is what's going on, yeah, precisely, as opposed to, yeah, where are we and is the Earth between the moon and, wait, is the sun involved in this at all?
You never did like the globe and the basketball?
I did, but I'm telling you, once you see this, it'll be like, oh, yeah. It's great.
George.
Yes.
So you prepared some bits for the show.
Yeah.
So what do you want to do? And
I got some fun questions, I thought. Okay. I always like to sort of get deep inside the rogues, as it were.
Hey, purely.
Is this one just brothers? I think.
No, these are just a couple of questions that I've thought about in the past. They're sort of fun. Some are quick, some are a little bit longer maybe, and I think we can go down the line, or whoever might want to chime in first would be good. And the first one I thought of was, today we had a little panel where we were, people were pitching ideas to Steve and to Jay and to me and Brian. And there were some really great ideas that were being pitched in terms of curriculum or some kind of new podcast or something. And there were some really cool ideas. And the thing that I want to know from you lot is, what is one of the worst ideas that you ever had? Is there something that you, maybe for the show that you used to do, that was a bit that didn't work, or that or that you tried once and it was like, this is a nightmare?
Does it have to be for SGU?
It does not have to be for SGU. It can be for anything in your life that relates.
Yeah, that was our original, that was like, I think the very first sci-fi show we came up with was Trek and Meatballs.
Trek and Meatballs?
It was going to be us talking about science fiction.
Eating meatballs.
And somehow this didn't work?
Yes, you do.
No, we actually filmed an episode of Science and Meatballs.
Yeah.
That was the idea. We were going to talk about science news items while we ate spaghetti and meatballs.
Okay. Why?
And it was a brilliant idea that worked really well.
Which is why it's on the air still today.
The only reason why it's not aired is because Jay never did post-production on the video, and that is it.
Yeah. Because he actually watched it and realized it should never go.
No, it was fine. I mean, one of us would be eating quickly while the other people were talking. You know, we kind of rotated it. It was fine.
Do you guys know? So there's. Do you know? I don't know if anybody here listens to Joe Rogan. You may or you may not. But I used to go on his show quite a bit early on before I podcasted. And one of his producers' name is Brian Reichel, and he goes by Red Band, and he runs a bunch of different podcasts in the Death Squad podcast collective. And he tried to do a show once where he's really into Olive Garden, and I'm also really into Olive Garden. Don't tell anybody. It's what happens when you grow up in the suburbs. And we recorded an episode once at the Olive Garden because we thought it would be a good idea. And the first 20 minutes is us talking about how excited we are to get breadsticks.
Unlimited.
And it took 20 minutes to get breadsticks?
Yeah, it was a slow day. And then it's just eating noises. And then, like, we didn't notice that our mics had fallen, like, down our shirts. It was, like, the most unlistenable episode we've ever.
Carrie, you're an amateur.
Okay.
When it comes to eating Italian food, I mean, we've got three professionals here.
Santa Maria, no bello.
Yeah, you're only halfway.
That's true.
All right, does anyone have a bad idea?
Bad idea. I've had a
time where I would thought multiple times, if I could send an email to myself in the past, this is one of the things I would send myself. And it was, maybe it's not what you're thinking, but it was, I was working out doing heavy, heavy overhead presses. Heavy, because I'd never done a lot of heavy overhead presses. That was a mistake, because after about 2 weeks of doing that, I was doing it and I heard a noise. And I was like, shit. So torn both rotator cuffs 20 years ago. So I went to the doctor, and he's like, yeah, don't do that anymore. No, no more overhead presses. But it wasn't that bad. He said, it's a medium tear. You don't need surgery. Just don't do anything for a month, and then don't do any overhead presses. So I didn't. And everything was fine for like 15 years. And then every once in a while, one of them would hurt for a few days, and then a year and a half ago, my left shoulder started hurting, and it didn't get better, So after 10 months of that, I'm like, well, I got to take this surgery. So I had surgery a few months ago, and it's finally healed, and I can start working out again. But that's just one of those stupid things I did that I'm really paying for, and I'm just waiting to have surgery for this shoulder. That's probably in 5 years, so it sucks.
How heavy was the weight you had that when it went? Do you remember?
So heavy. No, I know. It was, I don't know. I'll just make something up. 150? I don't know. Whatever. It was heavy. For me, it was heavy. And, God, don't do overhead presses. You want to grab your deltoids, take dumbbells, and just go up to here.
Oh, yeah?
Don't go higher. Don't go over your head.
Yeah, don't go past the T anywhere.
Hey, everyone. We have to break into our private show to talk about one of our sponsors this week, Lisa Mattresses.
A quality night's sleep makes all the difference. I say that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? The right mattress is definitely a Lisa mattress.
It's true. It's the product of more than 30 years' experience in mattress engineering and hundreds of hours of testing. It's comprised of three foam layers that provide cooling, pressure relief, body contouring, and support. It is the best mattress at the best value.
Over 300,000 happy Lisa sleepers agree that Lisa is the mattress that gives them the rest that they need.
Order your Lisa mattress online at lisa.com/skeptics and try it risk-free for 100 nights. And it ships direct to your door in a convenient box with free shipping and free returns. And you can buy Lisa for a fraction of the cost of traditional mattresses.
Yeah, so you can find the right mattress for you at lisa.com/skeptics. And don't miss Lisa's limited time Labor Day sale, where you can get up to $235 off your Lisa mattress when you go to leesa.com/skeptics. All right, guys, let's get back to the show.
Anybody else? Bad ideas. What do we got? Evan, anything?
My bad idea recently is that when Rachel, my daughter, was 8, I decided to try to teach her to drive. At 8. I don't even remember why.
8?
At 8. At age 8.
Was she a tall 8-year-old?
And so to make a bad idea worse, I decided that...
You got her drunk first.
I was drunk. Because I really am having a hard time thinking why I thought this was a good idea.
Rachel, I told you, no drinking until you're 12.
Rachel's always been interested in driving and how cars... And she's a great co-pilot. She knows all the rules of the roads more than I do. She knows certain things. She's fantastic. So early on, I'm a good driver.
Early on, I'm an excellent driver.
She took an interest in cars and things at a very early age. So I said, okay, Rachel, come here. Sit in the driver's seat. Here's how the car works. Here's where the key is. Here's the steering wheel. Here's what all the letters on the stick shift work. And here's how all this works. So decide to go ahead and turn the car on. All right, Rachel, we're going to let you drive up the driveway. Now, I've got this car parked at the bottom of a hill. Not even a flat surface.
This is your current house?
No.
No, the old house. That's when you had that crazy steep hill.
She was 8.
That hill.
Steep hill.
That's like a 40-degree hill. No, we're not talking some little thing. And, okay, Rachel, I'm going to take, because it's so strange. I'm outside the car. She's in the driveway. Bad idea goes worse. I've got my hand on the brake.
Is the door open?
Oh, the door's open, and I'm outside the door. Rachel, you accelerate, and I'm going to pull the I'm going to pull my hand off the brake, and you will slowly go up the hill, and then I'm going to stop. Okay, Dad.
Holy shit.
So go ahead. I take my hand off the brake. No acceleration. The thing starts to roll back all over me. By some miracle, I managed to, as I'm being rolled over on the car, I managed to reach back into the car and get my hand on that brake. And then I had this moment of clarity, like, what the fuck am I doing? Say when you're 17.
Evan. Wow. Evan, you should have done overhead presses instead. Come on.
Remember, Evan's vote counts as much as yours. Rachel, do you...
Father of the year here, right?
Do you remember that? Rachel, do you remember it? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
She's still in therapy. Nice.
All right, Rachel, give us the gas. Okay.
Kara, what do you got?
Okay, real quickly down the line. Would you rather, for the rest of your life, whenever you have to go someplace, be 10 minutes early or 20 minutes late? Jay.
10 minutes early.
10 minutes early.
10 minutes early?
Yeah, 10 minutes early.
I'd rather be 10 minutes early, but I'm always 8 minutes late.
Okay.
Like, in life.
10 early.
Yeah. All right, so everyone wants to be early. And it's like, that's locked in. You can never change that.
Vince Lombardi time, baby.
All right. Would you rather lose all of your money, have your bank account be emptied, or lose all of your photos?
Oh, lose my money.
In a heartbeat.
I would not. I've been spending the last 5 years of my life videotaping and taking pictures of my kids every single day.
Yeah.
Does that include video?
Yeah. I would not give that up for anything.
I lost
almost
all my photos when I lost my computer.
Oh, on the airplane?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was terrible.
So, money. I'd rather lose the photos because they're already gone.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to keep my money.
You don't have any more photos.
I don't have any photos. I only have the hard copy photos from when I was a kid, but I lost. Luckily, there's a lot of pictures on the internet already, so I was able to kind of re-download a bunch of them. Okay. But yeah, I lost
Steve?
A lot of photos.
That's a really good question.
Steve's got, you got you pictures
on your bank.
Just birds.
I mean, yeah.
Just your bird photos alone.
I have tens of thousands of photos.
Yeah.
And you're a great photographer. I mean, Steve has taken probably the best pictures of my kids that have ever been taken. Mm-hmm. He'll be like, oh, look at this one. I'm like, oh, my God, give me that. You never see them again. You just see them on the camera, and then they go into something else.
Steve's pictures disappear into the void somewhere. I've never seen hardly any of the pictures you've taken over 20 years.
I have them all.
Before I forget, everybody should go onto your Gmail accounts, and you could will them to someone. If you die, they can when you're dead, they can access your account. So if you have family pictures and stuff, so don't forget to do that. Yeah. Saves a lot of bullshit. They'll verify it. Google knows everything. They know. They
that's
yeah.
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 Just Google. When will I die?
Yeah.
Kara. Oh, so Kara. Evan. Evan. What do you think?
It's a terrible thing to have to choose, but yeah, you'd have to lose the money. I mean, because you can't replace the photos.
Lost the photos. Well, I'm keeping my money.
Yeah, temporarily. For the next 5 years, you go with the
memories.
Money.
Yeah.
How about you, George?
I'd lose the photos, I think, yeah. Although that presupposes that I have any money.
Right.
No. I'd lose the money. Yeah.
Can I spend all the money first?
On camera equipment? Yeah. Okay. Would you rather have the general population think you're a horrible human being, but have your family love you? Or would you rather have your family think you're a horrible human being, but have the general population love you and adore you?
Yeah. I mean, that's a no-brainer. It would be my family. I think a lot of people hate me anyway, so my family. Yeah, of course. Yeah, definitely.
I don't know, man. Like that you would be forever known as just a son of a bitch.
What? How do you define?
I mean, I could say chosen family as well, but like, you know, people that are close to you, whether it's literally
your
relationship.
Because that's like me.
No, but I mean, like, it could be your spouses, it could be boyfriends, it could be like good friends from college even, like people that know you better than the general population.
Inner circle, yeah.
You know, like...
I don't really have a big one.
I mean, Steve, could you imagine your daughters hating you, thinking you're a terrible person? No way.
Yeah, but you could monetize that public adoration.
That's a good point.
And it doesn't mean, wait, now is it permanent or could...
It's permanent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, shit. But you guys all have kids.
Yeah.
That changes.
Yeah.
I don't have kids. Yeah. That changes things a lot. Oh, yeah. I don't have kids. I'm not married. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love my boyfriend. I love him. But, like, you know,
yeah.
I've had other boyfriends. Some of them hate me. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
that's a little, I think that's a harder question for them than it would be for me. Definitely.
Well, I mean, it's easier because I could just, I would, there's no question. Yeah. I don't even have to
would
think
you
about
want
it.
That
the
means everybody's going to hate you now.
But, like, the legacy of the SGU to be this thing of, like, they're horrible.
Except me. They'd all love me.
They love you. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a Sophie's choice.
Family Trump's,
right? Yeah, Sophie's choice.
Yeah. Yeah, so in other words, like, the deeper way to look at it, because we've all been doing the SGU for 13 years, like, would you throw away your life's work to maintain the love of your family? And I would in a heartbeat.
I think you'd have to.
That's a good way to put it.
Especially
yeah.
with the kids.
It helps if you love your family.
All right, cool.
What about you?
Yeah, George.
I'm so incredibly vain that I'm concerned about.
But you also don't have kids, right?
I don't have kids,
yeah,
but I have a pretty cool family.
Me too.
You have a great family.
But they, you know, they never come to my show, so
Yeah, I said it. I said it. Yeah, I said it.
Uncle Roman.
Love you, Mom. That's
great. You know, your mom's just repeating the word rake, rake, rake.
Right, yeah.
Rake you, George.
Rake you.
Rake you.
Rake you very much. Yeah, it's to be adored, man. I don't know. God, that's like, that's the worst kind of temptation of,
well, who, for a musician.
For, I know, for like a man with my low self-esteem, that's like gold, man.
Who's the most loathed person out there today?
Hitler.
Alive?
Alive?
Alive? Yeah, alive. Like, who's going through
alive?
This right now?
Oh, the Skrilli. Yeah.
No, exactly. People have forgotten about Skrilli.
Yeah. Well, but he's loved too.
Yeah.
You know.
Jerry Sandusky.
Like, remember when who was that guy?
Yeah, some kind of molesting, awful human.
Oh, yeah. Sandusky, yeah.
Yeah.
Manson.
Like, that would be, you know, you can't go out. It's so bad, you can't go out.
People would scream at you if they saw you.
Also, he had, followers.
So you're going to be eating in a lot.
Manson, which is weird, but... Sandusky doesn't have, like, a core...
It's a Sophie's choice, man. Okay. This next one, it's a popular question, but I was curious because there apparently is a gender... sometimes there is a gender connection with the answer that's given. For one full day, you could be either invisible or have the ability to fly.
Oh.
Which
fly.
Would you want?
Fly.
No question.
No brainer.
Fly me to the moon.
Kara?
Hey.
Watch.
I'm on the fence. Isn't that the point of would you rather? I mean, I do dream about flying a lot.
Yeah.
It's weird, too, because I didn't when I was a kid. And then people always talk about flying dreams. And then I started having them. When you guys dream that you can fly, has everybody had them?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Are you, like, breaststroking in the air?
Sure, lots of times.
That's how I fly. Yeah. I, like, swim.
It's Superman.
I do both. I have it both. I do
no,
real
I can't.
Flying.
I figure out that it's not real. It's, like, because I'm trying to figure the mechanics of it.
It's an immediate trigger that I'm dreaming.
Yeah, I'm like, this is not.
Not me.
Yeah.
But I can maintain it. After I'm aware that I'm
That's
dreaming,
cool.
I'm like, I'm going
unpredictable.
I'm going
finicky.
Yeah.
But there are spurts where, like, for a long period of time, I could fly.
And it's
like
amazing.
Superman.
And it's amazing.
Oh, like Superman awesome.
It's a great
like in a lucid dream. It's incredible.
When I fly, it's like I hacked physics.
Yeah.
Like, I'm running really fast.
Right.
And then I take off. And then I can, like, keep elevating. And everybody on the ground is like, whoa, how's she doing that?
Like, really like cool. Douglas Adams is like, don't think about the gravity, and gravity won't think about you.
The thing about invisibility is interesting.
Now, would you have to be naked when you're invisible?
What is it?
Because who the hell wants to do that?
No, not necessarily.
Yeah.
What if it's cold? What if it's cold out? All
right. You have a cloak or something. Invisibility cloak.
Right, so, wait, no, I gotta go farther now. All right, you got an invisibility cloak. That means you could put stuff under that cloak.
Oh, God.
Right.
You could go somewhere and put stuff under that cloak and nobody will see it. All right.
You know why this is
add that, factor that in.
Because...
Now, the thing is, men tend to say fly, women tend to say
invisible. Yeah, but you
invisible.
Know why it's gendered is not because women want to be invisible so they can steal shit.
Right.
It's they want to be invisible so that they're not, like, harassed all day. Right. Like, there is something about being, like, so free.
Free. The freedom of it.
But it's one day. It's not a permanent effect.
I know, but it, like...
Yeah, but flying, too.
I don't know.
But
you can be invisible for a day. Lock yourself in your room. You're technically invisible.
Do I have time to prep?
You have time to prep? I would give you time to prep, sure.
All right, then I would pick invisibility.
Really?
What
are you going to prep?
You want to steal shit.
I'm not going to tell you, but I would. If I had time to get all my ducks in order, I would use the 24 hours of invisibility exceptionally well.
Okay, this is a hard one. What would you rather give up? The internet.
No.
Or.
Doesn't matter what you say.
Pizza.
Heating and air conditioning.
Well, can I have a temperate climate? Can I move to someplace where
you can move, sure. But you will never be able to be to have artificial heat or cooling.
That's fine.
Yeah, but what if you walk in the mall? Then what's going to happen?
You're utilizing artificial cooling.
So that's huge.
So now
that's
I can't
huge.
Go anywhere.
Right.
I thought you meant I was just impervious to it.
No, it's well, I'm not sure.
Define.
I would say
define the internet.
I would say where you live in essence, you would not have internet.
Like your car?
Yeah, like your car, your house, your job, you would not have either internet or air conditioning and heat.
Yeah. So you'd have to basically deal with what the elements would be like outside.
Well, see, you guys live in Connecticut, which is a totally different thing. Like I live inland in LA, so I have AC, but there are plenty of people who live by the ocean that don't have AC and heat.
You couldn't have a fire in the fireplace, so no heating.
You can't live in Connecticut. Yeah, I think to refine the question, you'd have to basically say before the modern convenience of what we know to be heating and air conditioning today.
We're so bad at it. This is
a technology question. So I would say that fire built by you is allowed.
Yeah.
I would say you can't have, you know, like HVAC. HVAC or internet. You have to
also,
pick.
Weren't we all alive before the internet? We were totally fine.
Is that my year? No, but everybody else
I wasn't
has
fine
it.
Until the internet.
You're basically an internet.
Yeah, I'd have to lose the HVAC and keep.
Yeah, you got to lose HVAC and just move to LA. Come hang out with me. You'd be fine.
I know, like my power was out for 3 days. I had no internet. I didn't know what to do with myself.
Wait. You could wear temperature controlled clothing. HVAC?
That's technology.
That's technology. I mean, you could wear like wool.
That's a really interesting question because it's making me actually assess right now how much I adore air conditioning. Like, I'm just one of those people.
You'd be miserable without
it. Mine's been out for this heat thing, and I was going insane. I did 5 days, and I was like, I was exhausted.
So what would make you more miserable, though? That's the question.
I think you would slowly adapt away from the internet. Yeah. I mean, the thing
is, I couldn't function at work. Your life would
change.
Most people would have to quit their
everything
job.
Everything I do happens online, though. Like, from banking to buying stuff, I mean, it's like, holy shit.
Or
like,
a podcast.
Can you imagine buying porno magazines again? Can you imagine that?
Who does that?
Bob, I know one hand is busy holding it up.
Come on, you didn't have to go there. I mean, come on.
This is getting creepy, guys.
Well, wait, you would get used to not having AC.
Yeah,
you totally would. You'd adapt.
You'd get used to both.
You'd totally get used to it.
I actually don't
really like AC. It kind of gives me a headache. I like to drive with the windows down. We're sitting next to an AC vent right now, and I hate it.
There's really age bias involved. I love it. Question, I'm like, so. I like the room to be like in the mid 60s.
Jay, think about life without the internet.
Yeah,
think
about
life without the internet.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah,
I don't know,
it's
George.
It's called 1985.
I know.
That's right. Yeah.
We talk about this a lot on the show, this like cognitive adjustment that you make where it's
92.
Really hard to go
back. Go back. It's like the bigger screen. You get the bigger screen, and then you see the screen you used to work on, and you're like, how the hell did I work on this screen?
14-inch monitor. Yeah. It's impossible. You can't.
I'm like on the internet right now while we're having
this. I've got a phone that's a lot smaller, but yeah.
I have to pick the internet. I'm texting
with Liz.
Okay, I have to think about it.
This is a little macabre, but I think it's curious. Would you rather know when you're going to die or how you're going to die?
When? Because you can.
Why when?
Planning. I mean, you can plan. You can deal with stuff so well. You get all your affairs in order. Do everything you wanted to do.
You can do that now.
I mean, I get that, but
but exactly. That's what you want.
It's a very accountant kind
the
of.
The how
it is. It is. Yeah. No, it's very calculated.
The how though could
how?
Extend your life.
Also,
right.
You generally
the
know
when
when
could
you're
as well.
Die.
But
like,
you can't affect it. You can't change
table.
It. You can't affect it.
It would definitely be when then. I mean, it would put a lot of anxiety for me to rest. I don't know, but Cyclops know when they die, and they obsess about that day.
Jay.
What's that from?
It would make you so much more anxious to know
mythology.
When.
No.
It's from a movie?
Crow. Yeah, would it make you more or less anxious to know when you're going to die?
I'm not saying in general everybody, but Jay specifically, I think he'd be more anxious to know when.
Yeah, but,
than
now. But if you find out when, and what if it's in a week?
Well, then you better get your
priority
order.
Well, but here's the thing.
But if you know how, it could be tomorrow or it could be in 100 years.
A lot of people know when they're going to die. That's actually not uncommon. It's very rare. I mean, people die accidentally now. Like, that's a thing. People, you know, get in car wrecks and things. But the vast majority of people in modern American society with medicine have a general idea when they're going to die. They get a diagnosis. They know that they have, you know, a
they know they're nearing the end of their life.
Take away the aging thing. If you're in your 30s and you're told you're going to die, you know, December 8th, 19, you know, when you're going to be 75 years old, like, would you want to have that information your whole life?
Yeah, because I feel like we already do. Like, yeah. I'm in my 30s now, and I generally know when I'm going to die, right, unless something terrible happens. Yeah, but I want to know how.
If you're given that information, that could cause you to die before then. Because if you're not going to die till you're 75,
no, it's not gonna change.
Does that mean I could jump out of a plane?
You can't affect it. Yeah, I guess.
Right? I mean.
That would make you so much fun.
Until that date, yeah. You can't affect the change. So someone delivers this, and this has been determined that you're going to die on this date.
But no, I would think under this premise, you would basically not be able to make yourself jump out of the plane. You know, come on.
Yeah, you could.
No, but I'm saying, like, something would cause, like, the plane wouldn't take off. There'd be some, you know, like, some, no matter what you tried.
You
would have no control.
You could be horribly injured and not die.
That's true, too. Yeah, that's true, too. And be Captain Pike the rest of your life, yeah.
Holy shit, imagine if you got the date and it's, like, 40,000 years in the future.
Whoa.
And then two years later, you become a paraplegic.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, they'll eventually cure it. You know? Wait a century and you'll be okay.
Do you think knowing how you die would affect your life, though?
Absolutely.
Like, if you know, let's say you die, you know, asleep and you know, in your bed,
it would reduce versus so much anxiety in your life.
Flying into the side of a mountain.
What if you're going to die in a car accident? Now the rest of your life you're driving anxious as hell.
Right.
I think I would rather not know either piece of information.
And think, what would it take? What would it take for you to be absolutely certain that the information was true? Would you rather? But it's fun too.
This is being delivered by some kind of sentient something.
Gotta go with the premise, dude.
I know, but sometimes you gotta like think of outside the box.
Do those characters know they're in a cartoon? Do they even know what a cartoon is? Just watch the f***ing show.
You're boring.
Right. Did they watch Star Trek on Star Trek?
Yeah.
This is my favorite question. Would you rather know the history instantly of every object you touch? So as soon as you touch an object, you
what's
will
that
have
word? There's
its
a word
full,
for that. There's a word for that.
Full story.
Wait. Quick okay. Specification.
Yes.
Do you mean the history of the concept and how it was invented, or do you mean all the people that have touched it?
No, the actual object itself.
So dollar bill.
Yeah, not like scissors and Fred invented scissors. No, like these scissors were owned by this person who stabbed his wife or what, you know, whatever.
Could you go back to the supernova that created the particles? And
I think it's just with the object itself. There,
I was kidding,
Bob.
Anyway.
So that's one power. So you can go all to a museum, and if you could just cop a feel, you could know everything about that object or any object you find in life. Or would you rather
door number three
be able to talk to animals?
Oh. Duh.
We can talk to animals right now.
Oh wait, yeah, because they talk to animals.
And yes.
Good point.
Sorry. You'd be able to understand what animals are saying. How's that?
In a heartbeat.
Animals? No question.
Yeah, but no, I wouldn't want to talk to animals because animals are stupid.
Right, I was thinking the same thing. What kind of conversation?
It's not going to be like Dr. Doolittle. It's going to be like, you know.
Like fear. Fear. Yeah.
No, what's that thing with the dog? Oh, riding in a car. That's my favorite thing. Oh, getting pet. That's my favorite thing. Oh, eating dog food. That's my favorite thing. And the cats, of course, are planning your demise.
Yeah. Right? Day 731 of my captivity.
I tried to kill the human while it walked down the stairs by walking between its legs.
I think,
now that Steve says that.
The object.
No.
I think the object would be
more. Animals have nothing interesting to say.
It would be more useful to humanity. You would be able to prove that you could do it. I think you could prove it.
Right.
Because you could be tested. You could be like, all right, dude, go in that room and touch one object, and I'll tell you with 100% accuracy which one you touched.
And you want to right.
Yeah, right. But you're saddled, first of all, with the information that, like, of all the disgusting hands that have been on it before you, which does not interest me at all.
I can always assume that.
And
but what if you like could go to Stonehenge and be like, oh, this is how they built it.
Yeah.
Or like go to the pyramids. Oh, this is how they built it.
Or a murder weapon.
Oh yeah, yeah.
First of all, your life would be horrible because everybody would be constantly exploiting you. Mm-hmm.
You'd have to have a secret identity.
Yeah. I would much rather.
You get to wear a superhero costume.
No, I don't want that. I want to be able to empathize.
The feeler.
I love my dog. Like, he literally is my
and
child.
Every prank will be coming to you saying, talk to my dog and find out what's
and
going on.
And I'll say no.
Yeah, and I was saying things.
No.
You would be the pet psychic.
No, but here's the thing. It's different. Like, I could just say no, And people would be like, because that's, yeah, cranks would be asking you. But legitimate, important, like, you would have a moral obligation.
But I want to.
Doesn't matter. You would be exploited. You would have a deep moral obligation.
Oh, like, here, touch this knife.
If you told anybody.
Absolutely. Yeah.
If you told people.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. People would have to find out. But I really feel like being able to empathize, like when my dog doesn't feel well and I don't know what's wrong with him, it breaks my heart. Like it kills me.
Let's say animals could converse. They're not, this is again, a magical power. It's Dr. Doolittle.
Yeah.
So that animals could say, hey, this is how migration works in pigeons or, you know, whatever.
I like grapes.
It's such a selfish premise. Like as if we're only doing it so that we have the knowledge. Like, I don't know. I don't like. It just to me feels
I
like
think
it
the
would
pet
be such
one,
a.
I think the animal one is between the two. That's the selfish one, because everyone wants to talk to their animals. I would definitely pick. You know, you would be just amazing for historical reference, and you would be able to, you know, to answer things that are unanswerable.
The information would be more interesting from the objects, but the animals might be more fun. You know, but I think I would go with the objects.
Take a board.
Well, everyone, we're going to break into our show again to talk about one of our sponsors this week. We have a new sponsor, Lego Technic.
So they sent me two different sets, and my son and I and my wife, we built the forklift, and it was awesome. I mean, this thing has gears. It has, you can turn a knob, like there's, you know, like I'll have a safety light at the top of a forklift, like a yellow or red light.
Sure.
If you turn that, it raises and lowers the forklift. It took us, you know, a good couple of hours to do it. And the manual was very easy, but you know, the detail that they put into these toys, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's like Lego for adults, really. We all got them, and it's just I've been putting it together with my daughter and just loving it. I mean, they're really, really high quality.
Yeah, guys, this is as advanced as it gets. We're talking hydraulic machines, we're talking pneumatics. I mean, it's really challenging and really fun.
Yeah, so if you want to build for power and speed, then build with real Lego Technic. And you can go to lego.com/technic and find your next Lego Technic project. That's lego.com/technic.
All right, guys, let's get back to the show.
Evan, you want to do your news item?
Sure, news item. An Israeli nonprofit called Space Ill, along with the Israeli Aerospace Industries, or the IAI, made an announcement just the other day that this company will be attempting to land spacecraft on the moon. Mazel tov, right? We know we talk about 5 to 10 years. Ah, this is going to happen 5 to 10 years. Forget that. We're talking 5 to 10 months. They're going to launch this thing in December, and our friends over here in the United States are going to help. SpaceX Falcon rocket.
It's actually 8 rockets.
Yes, that's right. That's the miracle. So,
thank you. But there's only fuel enough for one, and somebody get to the moon! It's a miracle!
And I can guarantee you they will not be launching on a Friday night. No Sabbath launch.
They'll hit someone else to you.
I've got a friend.
Get over here.
I've got a friend. His name is Chad. He's a nice boy. He'll come. He'll do it. Just push the button. Push the button. Just push it. Push the button.
It's called the Meshuggah Lander.
Wouldn't that be funny?
That would be funny.
That would be something.
Go for it.
That would be something. No, it's not named yet, but they will be announcing the name at some point. If this is successful, Israel becomes the fourth country to land on the moon. United States, Soviet Union, and China currently are the ones who have touched down craft and or people on the moon.
So, Evan, what is it specifically? Is it instruments? They're doing science, or there's a landing?
No, they are doing science. In fact, they are going to be specifically collecting data about the moon's magnetism, specifically for that purpose. But also, it's the beginning of Israel's sort of step into the upper echelons of space programs.
Yeah.
And it's private. I mean, they're doing this for $93 million right now, so under $100 million. This company started as part of the contest that Google started in 2010 when they made the announcement, private $20 million prize for any private company who could, you know, get their craft up to and land it on the moon.
Is that the X Prize?
Yeah, the X Prize. Thank you.
But did this company just build a lander? Because you're launching it on a Falcon rocket.
That's right. The lander and the instruments on there, all the cameras and the other.
Wait, so there are no Jews going to space?
There are no Jews specifically going to space. No, but this is the first step.
I love hearing news like this. You know, the more countries that do this, and you know, you're saying they have private companies that are
interested in developing technology. I mean, it's all part of the space economy that's coming.
Yeah, that's right. And they're doing it at a mere fraction of what the other countries invested.
Yeah, when you think the last Star Wars movie, the Solo movie, cost, you know, $220 million. That's, you know, the movie was more than twice as expensive than sending a craft to the moon.
I know.
But how much did it make?
They're not doing well. The movie is not doing well.
They have, apparently, this proprietary technology in the solid rocket booster, because it's got a solid fuel with a yidle diddle 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 diddle.
I didn't know where he was going to go with that.
So glad I picked this news item.
George, if I were a woman, I would marry you. You always
That's my life,
laugh.
Folks. There it is. There it is.
You are so
That's my
funny.
Dating advice to you.
This is why George picks is the adoration of.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Say it again. Say it again. Love me. Love me.
So, but I think the exciting part is that it's imminent. I mean, it's happening in a few months.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
This is something we'll be following up on and reporting about, you know, come December and February. I already know what my new news items are going to be those months.
We'll follow up.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, we're seeing so many space missions happening now, right? There just seem to be multiple significant things happening a year with dozens of launches a year. Like,
that's right.
We're really
India's preparing to do something similar as well. Their craft is going to be going up soon. And also with private funds involved. And you're right, Jay, we're going to see, this is the trend. This is the way it is going now. And it's good. It's very good.
Yeah, but we really got to get past, you know, we got to get to the point where we could send people into deep space again. Yeah. Right? It's been a long time.
I think that's coming. I mean,
we've never sent some people to deep space. What do you mean by that?
Well, deep space would be below, beyond Earth
orbit.
The ISS?
Orbit. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, beyond Earth. Like, it's the moon, Mars, you know.
Yeah, but I don't know if a lot of people feel the way you do.
A lot of people do.
Yeah, hell yeah.
But that's really, like, what's the point?
As far as
it's
versus
the human
sending robots.
We should do both. It's the human endeavor. We need boots on the ground.
It's all for the, like, spirit
it's
of it.
We're humans,
but some people might argue that's a massive waste of money.
Not just that, colonization. I mean, I think it's important to get a mini civilization off the planet Earth.
Yeah, robots are better for science, but if you want to colonize, you got to have people.
But I don't want to colonize. But, and I think there are a lot of people who think that think that having that outlook is what's wrong with the way we're treating our planet. Like, I'm really against the idea.
It's a false dichotomy. You could do both. You could take care of our planet and go to Mars.
No, I'm not saying you can't do both, but I'm saying that mentality.
What's the mentality?
The mentality that we can just leave?
Well,
it's
not just
the way that we're shepherding
our planet. I don't think it's a suggestion of that.
You don't?
That's
why the March for Science slogan was, there is no planet B.
Right.
That was the whole point of the slogan, was because I think so many people fervently believe that we're screwed anyway, let's just leave, and they actually have, like, cognitively moved beyond doing what we need to do to shepherd the planet. And I think that's dangerous.
Living on Mars is not the same as living on Earth in any way.
Nobody's saying it's the same
for centuries.
Yeah, but a lot of people are worried that the mentality of we need to make a base on Mars is because we know we're destroying the planet. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think the perception of it is false, but it's
preservation of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean,
we could be wiped out by an asteroid tomorrow. And I'd like to see.
I think the odds are much more likely that we will make Earth uninhabitable.
Yeah.
That's preventable.
Within 1,000 years?
I mean, I think.
Right, but an asteroid strike is not. Many of those scenarios are not preventable.
No, ironically,
we could discover a comet tomorrow that's on its way here that we can do nothing about that's going to wipe us out.
We could
get hit with a CME from the sun. There's lots of ways that we could be completely wiped out. Let's try to protect against that. We can do that by going on Mars,
and these space missions develop massive amounts of technology.
That's the thing.
That's true. I agree with that.
You need a human face at the front of these things, because that's how people respond to advancements. That's how historically it's been done. And even though the price of it may be greater than the information you would get from a robot,
I think that's a generational thing, personally.
Yeah. You think so?
Yeah. I didn't grow up during the space race, guys.
No, but I mean,
I watched the Mars Science Laboratory land, and it had a personality, and it had a Twitter handle, and people loved it, and Gale Crater, I'm in you. I think there's a new generation of people who don't think we need to send men with the right stuff. Right.
I mean, I'm blown away by the fact that we have people that are orbiting the Earth at all times right now. I think that's incredible.
And it's funny, that was always been ever since I was born.
Yeah, but so. I mean, you should still. I mean, but it's easy to turn the switch in your head just because.
Remember. No, I remember before the end. I'm 34 years old. I was born in 83. But so the Carol. Mirror, when was the mirror?
70s. Oh, gosh,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. There have been people up since before I was born, but there hasn't been the internet.
Kara, even though it's been there, like, you know, the internet has been, we're all infused with it. We can't imagine our lives without it. But even still, you have to have the perspective to appreciate the things that we have, right? I mean, even
the orbital perspective, as they call it.
Yeah, but the point is, you know, I think maybe that, I think the exact opposite. I think that's the problem, is that people should appreciate that danger and that, the exploration, that seed that humanity has. I mean, that's like, it's critical to our evolution and to our longevity and to our success as a species.
And what if you had a Sri Lankan woman be the first person on Mars? Like, don't you think that would, the influence that would have in terms of the impact on...
Maybe, but we're talking a long way down the future. Right now, we're talking a one-way ticket. That Sri Lankan woman is not going to be aired. She's going to die if she goes to Mars. This is a death mission.
Yeah, but we're going to colonize the moon first.
Exactly.
You know?
So I don't know. I'm trying to be realistic
versus a robot or something. You know,
I'd rather send a robot.
It's possible if we put people on Mars, though, that may give us appreciation of how nice the Earth is. Mars is a very inhospitable
place. Yeah, that's going to be the most unintended
cost of the ship.
Fully mature, I still feel like I'm 12 sometimes, you know, and sometimes I feel like I'm 70. But to add centuries to that maturation point, that's gotta totally change everything about it.
But we don't know.
That's what I mean, psychologically.
It's a virtually unexplored
territory. I want to see what happens. I want to see the most advanced technology 500 years from now.
So
I would love to see
how
that.
This gut reaction, how some people, like you say that, some people are like, yes, and I'm like, oh. Yeah. Just a really...
There's too many books I want to read.
Yeah.
One of the things that pisses me off is all the cool movies I'm going to miss. Come on.
I don't have that kind of FOMO. I don't know. It just doesn't... I also don't, like, document everything in my life.
But the thing is, for a lot of people, it's going to be like, well, I mean, do you want to take this medicine? Do you want to have this therapy? And then you could be young and healthy for... extend your healthy life for decades more than normal. You would just say, no, I want to get decrepit and die. Given that option that everybody was taking, you would just say, no, I want to get in, you know, decrepit.
I think the one thing that I would speak to, which would be really interesting, is that episode of Black Mirror, San Junipero, where you're not in you're going back into a kind of matrixy situation where you were young and you get to choose a path, but they know it's fake. They know it's not real life, but they've chosen to go to that place instead of dying decrepit in their hospital room. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen it, I recommend it. It's a more interesting thought experiment for me. But I don't know, Steve, you've been really quiet. What do you want to do?
You're all wrong.
He's tired.
it's unresolvable. I think you'll feel differently when you're in your 50s than when you do now. You're just at a different point in your life. And I do think absolutely that we need to put people on the moon and Mars. And that says nothing about our stewardship of our own planet. I think we could absolutely separate those two things. Yes, robots are better for science. No question. It's cheaper. Space is massively inhospitable to people. Mm-hmm. It's the craziest thing that we could do to try to live in space, but we should do it because it's hard. It's something that could unify all of humanity. And it's adventurous. This is part of what we live for. I think it's really important for the human psyche. It is the next frontier. We can do it. And I think it'll be good for the planet if we do it. I think it will give us perspective and resources and science and stuff. There'll be huge benefits to it. I don't think that the idea that, we could escape to Mars is going to doom our planet. I just don't see that.
I think it's affecting our mentality now.
And if anything, the International Space Station, as an example, is one of the most successful international endeavors. I mean, those astronauts... and cosmonauts, and I don't know the words of all the other countries' space travelers.
Taekwondo.
Those people become family up there, and they are actually influential. Like those relationships, I think, are important.
Exactly.
Yeah, but imagine if we had an international colony on the moon. You know?
That'd be
awesome.
That would be awesome.
I do and this is me just being a cynic, I'm concerned about the fact that, like, if we had a colony on the moon, the first time it happened, everybody would be really excited, and then it would be literally old hat. Because that's how, like, our generation
and
younger...
And onto the next planet, and onto the next adventure.
It's like, eh, cool, we landed another rover on Mars. It's sad, but that's how it is.
But that's true of any step of progress. Yeah. I mean, you could say, oh, yeah, my phone's even smaller and faster. Yeah, big deal. Yeah.
Exactly. But, so I just don't think it's going to have quite the impact.
But then the Belters are going to rebel against them. Bob, let's go on to science or fiction.
It's time for science or fiction.
Yes, this is theme. And there's four options. So you all know the drill. Blah, blah, blah. Science or fiction.
I want to hear
it. So, no, that's all right. Okay, so this is about Manhattan.
I'm disoriented. What's happening?
This is about Manhattan. It's past or what's happening now? What's? All right. So I'll just get into it. Okay. So a man once drunkenly stole a plane and landed it in the middle of Manhattan in front of the bar he had been drinking at. 2 years later, he did it again because someone doubted he had done it the first time. Did that happen? Did it not happen? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's see. Manhattan's iconic skyline is shorter in the middle due to the depth of the bedrock in that area. Number three. 9/11 mastermind Khalid Mohammed sent the FBI on wild goose chases literally by claiming that some geese in Central Park had explosives stuffed in their ass. Did that happen? Maybe, maybe not. In 1776, Manhattan caught on fire, destroying one-third of the city and some 500 houses. That's it. Easy, right?
I'm first. The geese is the fiction. Geese is the fiction.
Okay.
Geese is...
Oh, yeah, the clap.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
Such a good audience.
Very good. Okay. So, yeah. Ready?
The drunken plane one.
Ready? Here's the deal. Sorry. I thought you were regular. So, yeah, when my hand gets down here, you clap if you think that's the fake one. So, all right? So, if you think that's the drunken plane, if you think the drunken plane is fake, clap. Ready?
Manhattan, okay. Iconic skyline because of bedrock.
Right. I just heard a camera show.
Number three?
Number three, 9/11 geese. Ass explosion.
Did you prime them?
Yeah. No.
1776, Manhattan on fire.
Fire.
Okay.
Okay, so the landing of an airplane twice. I got it all in here. The landing of an airplane twice.
That's I.
The guy lands the plane. I plane lander pilot. Plane lander pilot! The guy is bragging at a bar, saying, I landed the plane. Then they didn't believe him, and he finds an airplane somewhere and comes back and lands again just to prove that they were wrong. That's the first one. I would not put that past a drunken idiot.
That happens to have a pilot license, but go ahead.
I think that explains very neatly why we see the change, and I think, you know, because there would be skyscrapers everywhere if the bedrock was able to handle the weight. So I think that's science. The ridiculousness of someone saying that there was explosives packed up a goose's ass, and the police responding, I could totally see that happening. And then the last one,
Manhattan fire.
Yeah, about the fire.
A third of the city.
Yeah.
Yep.
In the 1700s.
Yeah.
That's like two houses.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. I'm going to agree with George that the geese one sounds to me is the fake.
Yeah, I mean, the plane landing sounds like something somebody would do. And then the fire. Yeah, there was a war going on, right, at that time. And the British had Manhattan. And yeah, I think that, sure. And then... What was the second one? No, the skyline makes sense. And then, I mean, the thing about the goose is that a wild goose chase? I mean, really? Right? I mean, that's...
Two on the nose.
Two on the nose. I mean,
and then ass? Like, yeah, the birds?
I believe that somebody could stick some C4 up a goose's ass.
Yeah, but like, wouldn't that be the easiest goose to find? Like, he'd be walking on air.
No, but he said it didn't happen. It was a diversion. He said it was happening.
Yeah. You just said it was happening, so that they would go chase the geese around Central Park.
They would go on a wild goose chase.
But it's just the idea that they were going on a literal wild goose chase, which is also a metaphorical wild goose chase, is too much. So that's a fiction.
Okay, Karen?
I want that one to be science so bad, but I can't. I feel like I can't risk my stats. I'm enjoying very well the last few weeks.
Karen, yeah, you can't pick the ones that you just want.
That's kind of how I do this a lot, though. Yeah, I'd like the wild goose chase, especially if there was something like weirdly lost in translation there. And he was like, oh, it'll be epic when everybody finds out. But then you would think we would have all found out as part of it. So we're all saying that a third... Wait, so what's the fiction? Oh, that's the fiction. A third of the city on fire and 40 houses?
500
houses. So there were 150 right. houses, probably. Unless it was all in warehouse districts.
One third of the city and some 500 houses.
And some 500 houses. Mm-hmm. I don't know how big Manhattan was in 1776.
It was the same size.
Karen, there was a lot of...
It was Manhattan size.
Exactly. No, but you could take out a lot of the big buildings and a lot of the brownstones. There was a lot of wooden structures back then.
Actually, it was smaller, but a little smaller.
Thank you, Bob. Yes,
it was. Thank when they were digging out the Twin Towers, they took all of that.
Just that alone.
Yeah. Battery Park, I think. Battery Park.
But I'm going to go with the boys.
The boys.
The boys. Evan.
Bob, can you read the first one for me again?
I cannot. I will not. Oh, okay. A man once drunkenly stole a plane and landed it in the middle of Manhattan in front of the bar he had been drinking at. 2 years later, he did it again because someone doubted he had done it the first time.
Right, right, right. Yeah, it's the goose.
Did that.
All right, so we'll see. What would Steve say? All right, so you all, right? We're all done here?
Yeah. Right,
now, yes,
vote again?
Audience.
Let's vote again. All right.
Okay, Drunken Plane.
Drunken Plane.
Manhattan Skyline.
Skyline. Really?
9/11 Goose.
Goose.
Manhattan Fire.
And Fire. So Goose is still there.
Okay.
All right, Bob.
George, what'd you do?
All right, so the first one, let's go, I guess we'll take them in order. The drunken plane ride. Think about that, though. How you get drunk at a bar, then
what
you're...
What year was it?
I don't know.
That's probably critical to the story.
1350.
It's probably...
I'm an airplane!
It's after powered flight was invented. That's all I could say.
That one's science.
Yeah, still, though, just the idea. That's science. Just the idea, though, that somebody gets drunk and can pilot a plane and then steals a plane and then you lands it in a place in Manhattan. Yeah, where they could... I mean, that's still pretty amazing.
What year was it?
I don't know.
I love that story, though. Like, what happened? Who is this guy? He's in there.
I know.
I landed a plane. 2 years ago, I landed a plane, and they're like, bullshit, he didn't do that. Oh, yeah?
Wait here. You guys hear that?
Comes back and opens the door and goes, what the f*** is that out there?
So...
They're
all gone.
Last call.
So that was from website 25 Kickass and Interesting Facts About Manhattan. And,
I knew
and
that
it's
one.
True. Okay, so the second one.
The skyline.
Manhattan's iconic skyline is shorter in the middle due to lack of bedrock. That
science.
Is false.
No.
Fiction.
What?
That is fiction. Got holy all shit. You losers.
Is
all
right, bedrock? So. Is it not bedrock?
What's the
is
answer?
It because
so,
of.
I clapped for it the second time.
So, I remember Larry Fitzgerald, our friend, telling us about that, and it makes perfect sense. But that was not the reason why it evolved in that way. So let's see. Many people believe it's due to the lack of bedrock, because the bedrock is really deep, and you gotta put these big buildings up, gotta attach to the bedrock to make it really secure, and it does make a lot of sense. But, according to, Allison Walker, it's like the real reason is because the neighborhoods north of Chambers Street were where the historical tenement districts and factories were located. These were neighborhoods that were of little interest to high-rise developers because the rents there were too low to justify building tall. So it was just an area that was just could not support financially, could not support that, nobody, right?
Still.
It was economic reasons. Yeah.
So Bob, how psyched were you when you found the goose one? You were like,
Oh yeah. That was great.
Yes, so I wanted that to be the, true.
Yes,
true.
And it is true. So this is post 9/11. They had that guy Muhammad. They had him, and they were torturing the hell out of him. I mean, this was the stuff they did was kind of horrible. But he was basically, and this is the problem with torture. You just say anything to stop the torture. Yeah, and I'm sure he derived some pleasure in actually sending them on such wild goose chases as this. I mean, let's get the quote here. He had us chasing the goddamn geese in Central Park because he said some of them had explosives stuffed in their ass. This is former FBI counterterrorism agent Ali Soufan. So that's what he said when he was interviewed for a book.
So let's
look at the story.
That really being tortured, he said this?
What's because, that?
Okay.
So how did they, I have to live that moment. So the FBI goes to Central Park. They chase down
the geese.
None of those are right.
I'm tired. You know where I'm going with this. How did they find out that they didn't have explosives up their ass? They had to have a bomb person walk with the green suit.
Use your imagination.
Go up to the goose. I'm doing it right
now.
Nut
puppet guy.
Go up to the goose. Get, because his hand's in that green glove.
No, they didn't put their hand up there. I'm sure
because his hand was in the green glove, he picked up a fucking tool out of his thing and stuck it up the goose's
ass. I'm sure they could put it over the goose to find out if there was an explosive.
What are you talking about?
We're not explosive.
There's no portable detectors that would...
They just blew them all up.
Oh, my God.
That had to happen. That happened.
I think you can tell if a goose has a bomb up its ass.
How?
They would be walking funny.
Well, done,
yeah, well, they don't walk funny without
even funnier.
Wow, that was good. You got everyone.
That's awesome.
Two people, I think. Yeah. You got everybody.
And then the fourth one in 1776, Steve was right. Shortly after the Continental Army evacuated Manhattan and left it to the British, a massive fire broke out, destroying one third of the city and some 500 houses.
Wow.
Okay.
So awesome.
I tell
good
you.
Good job, Bob.
Evan. Good job, Bob.
I just moved up in the rankings a little bit. Yay.
Hey, everyone, before we go to Evan's quote to end up the episode, we do have a bit of an announcement. Barnes & Noble is now selling a signed copy version of our book, The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. I'm sure you guys all remember signing those thousands of pages that we did.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
My goodness. Yeah. My hand was so cramped.
But it was something fun about it, too. But yeah, that was a chore. But anyway, so there's... I can't remember the exact number, 1,700 books or so. These were signed by all five of us, mm-hmm. and you can only get them from Barnes & Noble. So if you go to our book page at theskepticsguide.org/book, you'll see one link there that says Barnes & Noble signed copy. That's the one you want to link to. You know, get those while they still last. Obviously, there's a limited number of those.
So while we were writing the book, we were coming up with a lot of different ideas on what could we do to make it fun and special, especially for our listeners. So this really is just for our listeners because you're the only people that we're going to tell about this. If you buy a specific copy of our book, you will find that it has an Easter egg.
Yeah, there's a little gold, not a literal, but a metaphorical golden ticket in one of the signed copies.
There were a few, you know, out of signing thousands of pages, a few mistakes were made here and there on them that you might get one that has something going on. But if you get the golden ticket, you'll know it because it basically says you won. So, if you get that book, take a picture of it.
To be clear, take a picture of the page with the golden ticket.
Yeah, not the cover of the
book. Not the cover of the book.
Won't help.
And send that to info@theskepticsguide.org. Make the subject SGU Easter egg. And we're going to give you a secret special awesome prize.
Ooh, are we not telling them what the prize is yet?
You can join us as a guest rogue on the SGU.
Oh, hello.
That'll be fun.
Now, if you have nerves and you don't want to be on the show, we will come up with another prize for you. It could be joining us at the Star Trek Museum. It could be, you know, lots of other ideas. But
yeah, right. You basically have a golden ticket that you could turn in for any of the usual stuff that we do, up to and including being a guest rogue.
Which is a really big deal because this is one out of thousands, I think, because there's only so many signed copies available. You got to go to Barnes & Noble and grab it before they run out. You might end up with the special book.
And I would go right now and shop for it online because for a limited time, they're having 50% off, but it's going to expire.
Just through Labor Day.
After Labor Day. So go on there now and grab your copy for 50% off.
All right, guys, let's close out our Nexus private show. All right, Evan, you have a quote.
This one was sent to us by a listener, Joseph Zeppa. Joseph Zeppa, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He sent this.
Science is a paradigm of how we ought to gain knowledge, not the particular methods or institutions of science, but the value system, namely to seek to explain the world, to evaluate candidate explanations objectively, and to be cognizant of the tentativeness and uncertainty of our understanding at any time. And that was written by Steven Pinker from his book, yes. The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Consequences.
Well, thank you guys all for joining me on this special episode. We're recording at Nexus number 10.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
And until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by SGU Productions, dedicated to promoting science and critical thinking. For more information, visit us at theskepticsguide.org. Send your questions to info@theskepticsguide.org. And if you would like to support the show and all the work that we do, go to patreon.com/skepticsguide and consider becoming a patron and becoming part of the SGU community. Our listeners and supporters are what make SGU possible.